Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Poetry with Flavor. I'm Miss Lucy, the host. Hold on 1 second. I'll return this off. Okay, let me start that again. Good evening, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. The moderator will be absent this evening because he's teaching a course. So feel free to comment or ask questions as we'll pause after each reading to give you a moment to do that. Well, fall has arrived and many of the HBCU homecoming celebrations will be in full swing in October. My alma mater, Livingstone College in Salisbury, North Carolina, will be celebrating on October the 14th and 15th. And on the 15th, the day of the game, Blue Bears will be playing against Fayetteville State University. They will also be celebrating a new president of Livingstone College, the 13th president to be exact. Dr. Anthony Davis is the new president of Livingstone College, and he is a 2001 graduate of Livingstone. So congratulations. So I, because of that's new, I just dropped, hold on. Oh, my goodness. I'm clumsy. I thought I would, because it's fall and the homecoming celebrations are starting, I thought I would read once again the poem I wrote for my class, class of 1969, the poem Rites of Passage, and it's called Rites of Passage, Gola Hall and the Dance at the Trent Gym. Now, Goler Hall was the freshman and sophomore women's dormitory. And back in the day, we didn't have a lot of entertainment things to do and or places to go. I forgot the name of the, oh my goodness, what's the name of the movie theater there wasn't fully integrated. When we did get an opportunity to go, they only had a small seating section in the balcony of the movie theater. The only other entertainment that we had was looking forward to a dance in the gym, which was named after Dr. Trent. And so that was a big deal to get ready to go to that dance. So I'll just, sorry, I just had my glasses. And can't find them. I just picked them. Okay, I'll get this broken pair. Okay. Saturday night at Goler Hall, from floor to floor and to the top of every ceiling, sulfur 8 and tar fumes float throughout the building, with hot plates burning red hot and straightening combs smoking, telling the secret of short hair growing long and silky. Tops of Dixie peach, pomade, heat on the hot plate to melt the grease into oil. Hair being pulled to the front to hide a face scarred with beauty burns from a hot comb too close to the skin as ladies of Livingstone press their hair and dress to impress to hopefully attract the gentleman tonight. For those of you who don't know, Livingstone, like most HBCUs, are founded by the church. Livingstone was African Methodist Episcopal Church. And so they had very strict rules for our behavior. And we're always addressed as ladies or gentlemen. So they were strict. And so let me go on with the story. Short and tall girls, petite and voluptuous girls, half naked, half clad, bird baths and showers fully occupied, water turning freezing cold, skins of black, brown, and gold, cinnamons, reds, mocha chocolate, and butterscotch. The ritual was in full swing, getting ready for the dance in the Trent Gym, when the lights on the second floor, East Hall, start blinking, and they were blinking in every room, and a chorus of voices reaches a crescendo, praying, God, don't let the electricity go out until I finish busting those naps in the kitchen. The ladies were timid souls entering Trent Gym, for in order to go into the dance, there were several gauntlets to pass. The first was the inspection by the fellows on campus who had arrived early, just to line up on either side of the entrance. Okay, page. To give testosterone-fueled catcalls of approval or disapproval. That took courage to pass through. The second gauntlet was more terrifying, as the bleachers in the gym filled with our chaperones, our professors, and the dean of women, who looked upon you as their charge and became our surrogate parents. And my, how they took that seriously. This was a Christian church school with high moral standards, and they kept a tight rein on youthful hormones and youthful transgressions all week long, as evidenced by Vespers every Wednesday evening, required Bible study class, church services in Varick Auditorium. Then there were the Coleman rules of conduct for each student. No hand-holding. Ladies couldn't wear pants. Gentlemen not allowed to sit straddle-legged on the benches under the maples and the oaks. Sign in and sign out wherever you go. Get permission to ride in a car. Dorm curfews. And let's not forget the 2 tons of saltpeter floating in our drinks of each meal. On to the dance at Trent Gym. As the ladies entered the dance, one last check of the outfits worn. Not too short, not too tight, girdle holding, the jiggle still, and definitely no cleavage showing. They were ever mindful of how they danced. No one cultivated gyrations of the hips, not too close to your partner, and not too wild. While secretly praying, our chaperones would tire before too long and leave before the last dance, which was always, always a slow, slow dance, like to the sounds of Percy Sledge singing "When a Man Loves a Woman." When our chaperones did retire and for certain had exited the building, the dance turned up a notch as the pounding dance steps released the dust from between the wood planks of the floor and covered our shoes and continued to rise and create a halo of dust above our heads. If you were dancing on the last dance, it usually meant that you would be escorted back to the dorm, where amid the lush hedges in front of Goler Hall, you would create a room of privacy as the evening kiss goodnight would gently press you up against the hedges, and the branches with their leafy tips would wrap around you and your man, and you become camouflage, incognito, wearing leaves in your hair and cloaked in the color green, secluded in your very own kissing booth, oblivious to all around you, never mind that just inches away to your left and to your right were other couples under cover of the ivy and the oaks. Never mind that the sisters without a mister were hanging out the dorm windows overhead, watching, signifying, masking their jealousy under the pretense of laughter. It's minutes before curfew, it's minutes before curfew, and a figure appears under the porch lights at the entry to Goler Hall. Mrs. Alcestes Coleman. The Dean of Women steps out and without a word looks to her left and looks to her right, and lips unlock and hands unclasp and drop to their sides, and personal spaces return as the hedges empty out. Mrs. Coleman pruned and cleared those hedges like a professional landscaper. The ladies head to their dorm rooms to grab their pillows tight, reliving the goodnight kiss. The gentlemen head over to Frankie's Chicken Shack for some barbecue-dipped chicken and share bragging rights. It's curfew time. Gotta get ready for church in the morning. I know that was 1960s, but it feels like yesterday to me. Okay. This is a short variation of the poem that I just did. This is just one short page, and it's just entitled Variation of Saturday Night at Goler Hall. Smoke rings floating tall, smells of sulfur, aid, and Dixie peach, as kitchens are getting busted to look pretty and neat. Hot plates jumping, red irons cooking, make the ritual complete. If Mama only knew of the goings on, anticipation of forbidden touches, Mother's not there to say mustn't. Excuse me, glasses. Secret dreams and funny feelings, rites of passage to womanhood, dancing close until strange intrusions dilute all illusions of you in Billy D's arms, and Mama's face appears on the body of the Dean of Women. Uh-oh, curfew. Good night. So that was my tribute to my time at Livingstone College. All right. Turning pages. I know I want to get back to the Harlem Renaissance, and I know some of you are probably saying, oh, my goodness. Yes, it's been several weeks that I've tried to get through the poem, Harlem Renaissance. This is what has taken place and why I have not finished. We are going to finish it, but not today. But we're going to talk about it, and I'm going to share with you two poets out of at least 30 or more poets that were viable during the Harlem Renaissance. Okay. The Harlem Renaissance Revisited, which I shared several episodes back and did not complete. At the time, it was the first time that I actually read it out loud, and having done so, I realized that the poem itself really didn't showcase the excitement of that time. It didn't showcase enough of the participants, and it didn't showcase enough of the accomplishments achieved at that time. So I started researching again, and I've written several more pages to it. If you recall, I told you it began as an 11-page poem, and it is now 14 pages long. when I shared with you all, I had only shared, I think we stopped on page 8 or 9. And as I recall, I had stopped on when I introduced the topic of the interlopers and the appearance of them in Harlem. And these were people who were outside of the group, outside of the culture, who were coming in to find out what it was all about. These were mainly white, wealthy businessmen. They were producers, musicians, politicians, you name it, who came, you know, to do what they did best. They took from the culture, the songs, the dance, the music, the art, the fashion, and they took it back to the white world with their name on it. For some of the Harlemites, though, doors did open, and they were able to expand their presence to the great white way of Broadway. Some of the interlopers that came, they watched the shows, and then they made offers to some of the black stars of the show, like Ethel Waters was one. And they were given an opportunity to perform on Broadway. But anyway, I am still writing, still researching, still adding to the story, because there's just so much to be said about the politics of race at the time, about the writings of the time, not just poetry, but black newspapers, black magazines were published. I need to talk about the black churches, the political leaders, etc. It's just so much. The magic of that time has just swept me away again, and I'm enjoying researching it. I really love this time period and what took place. So when this poem is finished, and I do believe it will get finished, I just don't know when, but I'm going to try my best. I'd like to share with you two poems from that time period. And these were written by, the first one, let me get it on this screen so I can read it, by Claude McKay. And it's called If We Must Die. And I don't have the exact date. He wrote this between 1919-1920. And it's about the racial unrest and the riots in Harlem at that time, and it's about lynchings that were taking place. But this is one of his most famous poems, but he's written many poems, he's written many short stories, and he's written novels also. And he was, Claude McKay was the first black author to be published by a mainstream publishing company at that time. But Okay, I'm going to read this now. This is by Claude McKay, and I'm sorry, I'm uncertain about the date between 1919 and 1920, I believe. But, okay, if we must die. If we must die, let it not be like hogs hunted and penned in an inglorious spot, while round us bark the mad and hungry dogs, making their mock at our accursed lot. If we must die, oh, let us nobly die, so that our precious blood may not be shed in vain. Then even the monsters we defy, shall we be constrained to honor us, though dead? O kinsmen, we must meet the common foe, though far outnumbered. Let us show us brave, and for their thousand blows, deal one death blow. What though before us lies the open grave? Like men, we'll face the murderer's cowardly pack, pressed to the wall, dying, but fighting back. That's Claude McKay. Okay, the next one I want to do is also very, very famous and actually became, let me make sure I can get to it first. Hold on 1 second. Come on. Okay. James Weldon Johnson. Is the author of Lift Every Voice and Sing, which has been called the Black National Anthem. I'm going to please come up on the screen. Hold on, folks. Now, this poem, I believe most of us in the community know at least the first verse, but I didn't know the second verse. I just, when I read it today, I said, oh my goodness, I've got to read the whole thing. It's beautiful. Lift Every Voice and Sing, written by James Weldon Johnson. I wish I could sing it for you, but I sound like a frog. Okay. Lift every voice and sing. Till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. And that's what most people know, that first part. Hold on. Sorry, I'm trying to adjust this screen. Move it up. This is the second verse, which I am not familiar with, but will become familiar with. Stony the road we trod, bitter the chastening rod, felt in the days when hope unborn had died. Yet with a steady beat, have not our weary feet come to the place for which our fathers sighed? We have come over a way that with tears has been watered. We have come treading our path through the blood of the slaughtered, out of the gloomy past. Till now we stand at last where the white gleam of our bright star is cast. God of our weary years, God of our silent tears, thou who hast brought us thus far on the way, thou who hast by thy might led us into the light, keep us forever in the path, we pray, lest our feet stray from the places, our God, where we met thee, lest our hearts drunk with the wine of the world, we forget thee. Shadowed beneath thy hand, may we forever stand true to our God, true to our native land. And that was James Weldon Johnson, Lift Every Voice and Sing, which has become the Black National Anthem. Okay. So those are just two of so many poets who were participating in the Harlem Renaissance. Not just poets were there, but also we had publishers, we had newspaper publishers, artists, musicians of every kind, and it's just a time period that really has me. I'm really I'm really enamored with this period of time, and this as many times as I've read about it, each time I do a reading, I find something new. I discover something new. I discover something even more awesome. And if you want to be entertained, get into the Harlem Renaissance. Also, you can put what tag did I put in there? I think I put in Harlem Renaissance movies, and you'll be able to see the fashions, the dancing, what the nightclubs look like. Just a fascinating time. So, as I said, it's drawn me in again, and I'm rereading and discovering, and I'm adding to this once 11-page poem, now 14 pages. Well, I don't know how many pages it'd be. I'm just going to do it until I feel like I've captured the excitement of the time and the importance of that time, and try to highlight more participants in the Harlem Renaissance, which as I said, I discovered, realized while reading my poem to you the first time, that there was so much that I had left out, and that I felt like the poem didn't really capture that explosion of talent and independence, and it's just so much. So, okay. So we're going to leave the Harlem Renaissance, and I'm going to hold on a second. If there's anyone who'd like to say anything, you may. Okay. I'm just going to do some random ones. I just thought of something else. I think I need to sit down and do. I mean, not. Yeah, I do for my own enlightenment. Just how much has Black poetry changed from then to now? Have the topics changed? And I don't think so at all. But that's just something just came across my mind that I put it on my little notepad to do. Okay. I'm flipping pages as usual. Okay. I just had those dumb glasses, and I'm using this broken pair now. I don't know what is wrong with me. Anyway, poem is about the BMA. BMA was the Black Arts Movement of the late 60s and through the 1970s, and which I consider myself a part of that era. The poem, I think, is self-explanatory, but I'm going to share it with you. This is just an excerpt. Okay. It's called Excerpt from a Big Bang Theory of Creation, and it's by Everett Haugland, H-O-A-G-L-A-N-D. And the poem can be found in the anthology entitled Black Gold, an anthology of Black poetry. Maya Angelou makes poetry black with a capital B. It's no mystery, subject, matter, mode, attitude. You know our ways. We are as likely to ritually recite as write. And when we do pen a poem about a who, a what, a where, a why, or a when, it often sounds like speech, too. And that tends to be true, whether it's about God, politics, love, family, or being blue, or when mining a mother's load of dozens with or four brothers or sisters, or when just turn the page, or when just improvising with cousins, something we're not likely to do with privileged others. What makes a poem black with a capital B among those of us in the U.S. descended from ancestors who used to be the capital in capitalism centuries of free market slavery and sharecropping? History, her story. What makes a poem black? Ain't no mystery, ancestry, legacy, politics, class, culture, style. Confluence of the mass mixed things that come to mind out of a consciousness of kind. Mixed in and out of mouth things like ring shouts, refrains, signify, jive, blues, jazz songs, scat, the dozens, R&B, break beats, rap, all that black mouth evolved north, east, west, first hybrid down south of what we used to say is where it's at, free. Poetry of the slave ship's choked hold, free of the slave maker's silencing arm bit, freed from verse cages of poetry, liberated, liberating poetry, free to be what comes out of our own history, current events, and hopes, be it a penned declaration or improvised oration as affirmation of its own nation within nation, recite it or write it or hear it or read it like holy writ because it is. So be it. Again, that's by, I'll pronounce his name again, written by Everett Haugland, H-O-A-G-L-A-N-D, and it is an excerpt talking about the Black Arts Movement from the late 60s and early 1970s. And I think that just answered my question when I said I need to compare the poetry then and now. Our strengths, our sorrows, our joy, our pain, it's the same. That's how I feel. But that's for further research for me. So let me put a marker in that page. Again, that was from the book, the anthology, Black Gold, an anthology of Black poetry. Okay. Let's see. Hold on just a second. Is there anyone who wants to say anything, or is there anyone there? Okay. All right, what I'm going to do now, I just think I'm just going to do some random pieces. excuse me. I realize I've written a lot of pieces about food. Need to put all those together. Okay. Okay. There is no particular order to this. I've read these many times during our episodes, and I'm sorry if this is bugging you, but this is the best I can do right now until I can get someone to help me move boxes of poetry out of that darn garage. But anyway, this was a, let me see. Let me move that one. This one has to do with, you see so much about it on the internet and TikTok about body image for women, which I think is changing, but ever so slowly, but it's still not without criticism from crazy folks. But this has to do with a Black woman getting ready to go out for the day. And she has a voluptuous body, which she isn't that confident about just yet. So she's hesitating to go out. But this is what happens. It's called Slow Tide. Unaware of Her Majesty, wrapped in mahogany shine, she traps the beauty of her blackness in a girdle tightly bound, ringing through her head as she struggled with her ampleness a familiar childhood rhyme. Put on your girdle, baby, 1, 2, 3. Put on your girdle, baby, 1, 2, 3. She remembers wriggling and twisting of her then little behind. But nature would not be tame now, and so she put the girl aside. As she stepped out for the day, she walked carefully to keep the roll and rumble to a slow tide. On the street where she traveled, brothers were standing on all four corners. But as she passed by their sight, pocket pool was played and elbows touched, and someone remarked, and all agreed, churn that butter, girl. Her slow tide gave way to a big smile. Okay. Let's see what this one is. Okay, this is Ode to Chair Dancing. Chair dancing is very popular among us elders. Let's see, between arthritis and walking canes and so forth, we've learned to chair dance. But anyway, just trying to make light of the matter. This is called Ode to Chair Dancing. Smooth feet and slender ankles, once adorned by a gold ankle bracelet and pointed toe spiked heels that executed the fanciest of footsteps to the latest dance craze and never, not ever got tired. Well, now they move a little slower, bred beyond recognition into crepe-soled lace-ups that are easy on the corns and keep each step comfortable and sure. But the body remembers the beat, loves the rhythm, and still moves to the music as shoulders, arms, head, and neck create new steps as she sits in her favorite chair by the radio. Okay. Let's see what this one is. I don't know why I wrote so many about feet. This is another one about feet, but it's just called Feet. Been standing all day. Feet throbbing with pain. Swollen, they strew for the day. Maybe a soaking will ease it away. Heels looking like peeled potatoes. Skin's crusty enough to bake a pie. Corns lined up side by side. Hurt so bad, I just want to die. But got a party tonight. John Taylor's singing the blues. Well, let me get the butter out so as I can slide on them pretty new shoes. Okay. Flipping pages, flipping pages. Hold on. Give me just a second. Okay. Okay, this one is Gospel Choir. Excuse me. They sing with golden throats that transform sorrow to joy, with purple wings of choir robes flapping, moving rhythmically, directed by the Holy Spirit. Swoons of overcome fill the pews as they sing Amazing Grace, and handkerchiefs and hands begin waving in the air. Softly they sing His grace, His grace, His grace, His grace, slowly building to a crescendo. And the congregation is standing and some dancing in the aisles, and their voices reach the rafters as the congregation joins in song. How sweet, how sweet, how sweet, my Lord, until it reaches heaven and God's ears, and God himself is moved to shout, Lord, have mercy, my children sure can sing. Okay. He's so silent out there. Is there anybody out there listening? Okay. Let's see. Sorry, you know how I flip pages. We'll do another church song. Okay. This is called Weren't Called. And the idea for this poem came from my grandmother, who every time I took her to church, go to church with her, and she would let me know, you know, before church began, whether or not the pastor was spirit-filled or was the pastor fame-filled. In other words, Was he called by the Spirit to preach the word, or did he just call himself to preach the word so he could get some of the perks of being a leader? So that's where this poem comes from. Weren't called. He watched as the pastor exited his shiny luxury car and was greeted and adored like a movie star. Congregation responded like fans in a frenzy with hugs, kisses, thank yous, invitations, and gifts galore. He was mesmerized by the pastor's command of his flock's emotions, from tears to joy, to shouts, to holy dancing, that led to a collection plate, led to the collection plates overflowing past 10%. That's when he got the notion. There's more fish in this ocean, and he'd only have to work one day a week. And so he began to pursue a degree from some godforsaken get-it-quick-and-cheap bound in the back of some magazine. Soon his flock came, but ever so slowly, to hear him deliver the word, but not caring what he said, and daring only to think of the collection plates, he didn't notice the swiftness with which his flock had left. There on the front pew, eyes closed, head bowed, was a grandmother fervently praying. The new pastor came down from his lofty pulpit. What had gone wrong? The kindly grandmother replied, with sadness in her eyes, "It's about Jesus, not your smile. You just weren't called to it, my child." Okay. Hold on. Sorry, I'm always flipping through pages. Sorry about that. Okay. Let's see. We'll do this. This is like a rites of passage for young boys, or young men, I should say. And, okay. Saps are rising. Little bro started taking more than his usual once a week Saturday night bath. And daddy's cologne mysteriously began to evaporate. And his good leather belt seems to have disappeared. Little bro's jeans now had to have a razor-sharp crease. His tennis shoes gave way to brown leather loafers, and his sweatshirts that he swore never needed washing changed to handsome, crisp button-down shirts. And all night, every night, basketball games came to a halt. Says he doesn't like the press fire anymore. And his nails, black with Lord knows what, are now carefully manicured. I said, "Mama, what's going on with that boy?" And she just laughed and mumbled and said, "The sap's arising. Old honey boy is just smelling himself. Sniffing the wind and smelling himself." Okay. Let's see. According to the clock on the stove. It's about, I can't even see it that well, and I'm not going to get up, but I'm not quite sure how much time we have left, but I think we're nearing the end. And if you have anything to say, any comment or any questions, please feel free to do that. Okay. This is America the Beautiful. America the Beautiful is a misnomer, inaccurate, misleading. Just ask Native Americans, the original indigenous Americans, about cultural genocide. Ask them about the civilizing programs to make them more like Europeans, European Americans, forced to let go of tribal practices, forbidden to speak their native tongue, forced to learn English, and haircuts all around, and European clothing to cover their nakedness, and pushed off their lands, forced into slave labor, and introduced to poverty, alcohol, abuse, and disease. Just ask African Americans, stolen from the motherland of Africa, enslaved, beaten, chained, raped, hanged, not allowed a family, sold at will, treated in the most heinous example of man's inhumanity to man, to build America, which has never, forced to build America, which has never said thank you, which has never given them a stake in ownership, who to this day live under daily assault from decades-long campaigns of terror and attempts at annihilation, criminalizing his skin color, his body added to a hunting season schedule under year-round category. Discount the number of dead black bodies and the bullets found within. Okay. According to, I'm trying to look at this clock. It's a little ways away from me. And it looks like I have about 6 or 7 minutes. I can't really see. Okay. So we'll continue on. And I hope you're enjoying these poems, and I'd love to hear what you think of them. That helps me to be better, get better, try harder, and get it right. Okay. I'm just flipping a little bit. Okay. Okay. Just a child. You made me wear red fox stockings that turned my skinny six. Before I begin this poem, for those who don't know, red fox stocking was an actual color of stocking for black folk, no matter what range or hue your skin color, whether you were light, medium, or dark, there was only one color nylon for you to wear. Okay, so that's the reference. So let me start again. Just a child. You made me wear red fox stockings that turned my skinny sixth grade legs as orange as pumpkins, as a jack-o'-lantern's head. I didn't understand the sneers and mocking. I was just a child. You made me make a secret about my love of the color red, because as black gals wore it, they were called whores. And I was just a child. You made me know in no uncertain terms that white kids were better, as if I had some contagious germs, and I was just a child. You made me hate my hair and nose and lips, as every year your white Santa never brought a doll to look like me, My beauty was never in his thoughts, and I was just a child. You made me feel dumb with your school books that lied and tried to say my people gave nothing to this world and will achieve even less. And I was just a child. You made me use lemons in abundance and bleaching creams to try and change my black Sundance skin to damn near white. And I, a child. You made me eat watermelons at the kitchen table when everyone knows it's much more fun to eat outside and see who can spit the seeds the furthest. So inside my house, frightened as a little mouse that you might see me and call me a watermelon head, I placed the seeds in the trash can. And I was just a child. You made me miss my childhood, laden with the burden of your fears, as if your terrible confusion could stop me from becoming who I am, a woman, black, beautiful, and strong, who will not let you do this to another precious black child. Your ugly wrongs. Okay. Okay. Well, according to that kitchen clock, we have about 2.5 minutes. Okay. If there's anyone out there who would like to say something, please do. Keep an eye out on the weather because that hurricane is, they say, is one of, what's it called, Ian, or Ian, Ian. The hurricane is a very large one with winds over 100 miles an hour. So please be safe and please check on your loved ones. And I hope you all have a good night. Thank you so much for tuning in.